Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
Clackamas County's restaurants, bars, gyms, and indoor entertainment venues could experience a devastating third coronavirus closure. This could happen as early as next Friday if COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations continue to surge statewide. Governor Kate Brown made the announcement during a news conference Friday alongside representatives of the Oregon Health Authority, saying the long-predicted fourth wave of coronavirus infections is, quote, now here, end quote. With Oregon now ranking second in the nation for having the most rapid growth with infection spread, our doctors and nurses are once again overwhelmed, said Brown. New cases over the past 2 weeks have actually been accelerating faster here than in any other state in the country, with a 58% increase in the past 2 weeks, according to the New York Times. Oregon also ranks 21st highest per capita over the past 2 weeks, much worse than the state's overall performance since the beginning of the pandemic, when the Beaver State recorded fewer cases per capita than 47 other states. Clackamas is among a dozen counties that currently meet the criteria for extreme risk, the highest and most restrictive level in the governor's current reopening framework. The extreme risk level would shut down indoor dining for the third time in Clackamas County, as well as limit large gyms and movie theaters to no more than 6 patrons and prohibit indoor visits at nursing homes and other long-term care facilities. The threshold for extreme risk is 200 new cases per 100,000 residents. As of Saturday, April 17th, the rate in Clackamas County is 212.3 per 100,000. Before now, a backstop was in place to prevent any county from moving back to extreme risk as long as statewide COVID hospitalization stayed below 300. But according to Governor Brown, that could change as early as next week, with hospitalized patients at 276 Friday. In the race between vaccines and variants, right now the variants have the upper hand, Brown said. At this moment, we are moving backward. Oregon needs to be moving forward. The governor also said the state would cancel a so-called waiting week period before moving the counties back to the state's extreme risk category, meaning the change could take effect as early as Friday, April 30th. Health officials are set to reassess the metrics Monday before announcing which counties will make the shift. There was one large and notable exception to the Canby School District's plans to return most students to 4 full days of in-person instruction on April 27th, namely Baker Prairie Middle School. The district has only one middle school, with the exception of 91 School in Hubbard, which serves kindergarten through 8th grade. Baker Prairie will remain in a much more limited hybrid schedule until the end of the school year. Administrators said even given the more generous 3-foot distancing guidelines now permitted by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they were unable to expand in-person learning at Baker Prairie due to limited space and staff. But at the Canby School Board's April 15th meeting, a number of parents and community members voiced their opinions that those excuses were not good enough. There is no reason for us not to be back in school full time, wrote Darla Schult, a mother of two elementary students and one middle schooler. It is completely unacceptable. If something isn't done, we'll be pulling our children out of school. Another resident said, I think it's completely unfair to our students that they are limited to two in-person days, while other schools are allowing four full days for our in-person classes. David Smith agreed. All of our students need to be provided the same opportunities for in-person school. One of the most heartbreaking comments came from Sarah Morrow, who recounted how she had read Superintendent Tripp Goodall's email to her three children last week, discovering in real time that her middle schooler would not be returning to 4 days a week with her younger siblings. My daughter is suffering, and you had the power to help, but you gave up fighting for her, Morrow told the district. You gave up on all our students at Baker Prairie with a swipe of your pen, and you voted against fighting for my daughter. Later in the meeting, Goodall and Baker Prairie principal Jennifer Turner elaborated on the unique challenges facing the middle school. The fact is that virtually all BPMS students, 98%, have opted to return to in-person learning. Fewer than 50 want to remain in Canby Online Learning Academy. From there, it comes down to room capacity, Turner said. Even under the more relaxed standards, Baker Prairie classrooms can accommodate a maximum of 19 students. And even then, most would be still out of compliance with regard to the 6-foot distancing rule still required by four staff. With current enrollment, the average class size would be 21 or 22, which fails to account for the possibility of additional COLA, or Canby Online Learning Academy, students choosing to return or of new students moving into the district. Art, music, and band classes would be even larger, with more than 30 students enrolled. I can't make the rooms any bigger than they are, Turner said. We have to follow the guidelines, and this is not my guidance, it's the guidance that's been given to us. Regardless of what happens this May, Goodall said that the district plans to offer 5 full days of instruction in person in the 2021 to 2022 school year. We are planning on going back to a normal school year in the fall, he said, and Turner made clear she would continue to explore outside-the-box solutions for Baker Prairie. I have not stopped thinking about it, she said. I wake up at night. I think about it early in the morning. It is constantly on my mind how to get our kids back into school more hours and more days. We are fighting for your students, and the community needs to know that. We have not given up on your kids, and we have not given up on you as parents. The Canby Planning Commission earlier this month rejected a proposal for a proposed senior living development on the corner of 13th and Ivy Street, citing traffic and other concerns. The story, Asteria Senior Living, proposes a 2-story, 104-bed assisted living facility specializing in memory care with 4 independent living duplexes also on site. The applicant plans to offer 55 memory care beds on the first floor, while the 49 units upstairs would be reserved for other high acuity patients who have not been diagnosed with dementia. The property owners, Danielle and Petronola Donovan of Donovan Investments, have operated a small licensed long-term care facility on Warner Parrott Road in Oregon City since 2006. The 2.6-acre property is located on the southeast corner of South Ivy Street and Southeast 13th, across the street from Canby Adult Center and Hope Village, which also boasts an assisted living, post-acute rehab, and memory care facility operated by Marquee Companies. Marquee was one of the opponents to the project, represented by Zach Fogg, its vice president of operations. We are very skeptical that an adequate market need exists at this location for additional units, Fogg wrote in a letter to the Planning Commission. Please consider the needs of the seniors in the community and not approve this development. One strong and viable senior housing community with experienced operators is what this community continues to need. True or not, Planning Chair John Savory noted that the city cannot consider factors such as market demand when reviewing a land use application. We're pretty constrained, he said. The economic impact on an existing business is not within our purview. However, commissioners had other concerns with the project, including the density of the development, traffic considerations, and parking. I think the occupancy is a little high for the property as it sits, explained Commissioner James Hebe, so I won't be making a motion to approve. Commissioner Jeff Mills also feared the development was too large for the property's zoning of low-density residential housing, which the Canby Municipal Code designates as R1. I'm very uncomfortable with the mass of this building, Mills said. It is a 56,000 square foot structure that's trying to look like an apartment building and it's sitting in R1. That doesn't add up to me and I can't go along with that. Others, like Commissioner James Patton, voiced concerns about the impact the development would have on 13th and Ivy Streets, and particularly the neighboring intersection. Ultimately, commissioners voted unanimously to deny the proposal. We'll send it back to the drawing board, folks, Savory announced after the vote was in. City Administrator Scott Archer told Now Hear This Canby that the applicants have appealed to the Planning Commission's decision to the City Council. The hearing has not yet been scheduled. At Whiskey Hill Winery this summer, the phrase smoky finish might be commonly heard this year. And not because, as I suspect is the case most of the time, someone is pretending to be able to taste whether a wine is toasty, loamy, or muscular. No, the smoky finish is quite literal for many Oregon Pinot Noirs produced in 2020, as the destructive wildfires last September filled the skies with ash and charcoal, during a time when vintners would normally be preparing the harvest. The Willamette Valley is one of the world's premier regions for Pinot Noir, and the wildfires were brutal on the fruit, Whiskey Hill Winery's Chris Habling explained. The wine grapes are most susceptible to smoke taint right before the harvest, and this is when the fires exploded. Before last year, Oregon wine growers were not as familiar with smoke taint, also known as smoke impact, but they learned fast. At Whiskey Hill, Helbling and his team read a lot, talked to our industry friends, and in all honesty, hoped for the best, Helbling said. The only way to know for sure how badly grapes were impacted is through scientific tests, but lab results were so backlogged last fall that the harvest would have rotted on the vine before results came back. We had to rely on our senses, Helbling said. After careful consideration, Helbling decided to use the crop to make white wines instead, which tend to retain less of the smoky flavor and aroma due to being fermented without the skins and seeds. This summer, Whiskey Hill will be offering a tasting flight of these two estate wines, a white Pinot Noir and a Riesling, a sort of real-life demo of making lemonade out of lemons, or in this case, making wine out of smoke-impacted grapes for the adventurous connoisseur. Helbling said the experience also gives him the opportunity to share more about the winemaking process, how the smoke impacted it, and what they learned. Located at 29510 South Barlow Road, Whiskey Hill and Postal Waits Tasting Room is open from noon to 5 p.m. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Last call is 4:30 p.m. The Canby Police Department has recognized a local resident for her assistance in apprehending the suspect in a hit-and-run that damaged a parked car. Shortly after 4 p.m., April 19th, Katie Wagner was driving on Northeast 13th Place with her children when she saw a silver BMW SUV driving suspiciously, apparently trying to park or turn around. After the vehicle drove away, she noticed a damaged car parked where the SUV had been. Wagner quickly snapped a cell phone picture of the BMW's license plate as it left the scene, then undertook substantial efforts to find and notify the owner of the damaged vehicle, police said. Canby Police Traffic Officer Alan Miller responded to the incident and used Wagner's photo to locate the hit-and-run suspect. Miller contacted the suspect and noticed that he was very intoxicated, according to a release from Canby PD. The suspect was arrested and charged with driving under the influence of intoxicants and hit and run. Miller last met Wagner and presented her with a thank you note from Chief George Trow and a Canby Police Challenge coin in appreciation of her efforts to keep the community safe.
Hey Tyler, I was reading an article the other day and I saw that 53% of Americans say they value technology even more since the COVID outbreak.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw that article in Obvious News Weekly.
Okay, you don't have to be mean.
Seriously though, it is true. I know that I can't function anymore without all of my connected devices. And I heard that DirectLink saw a huge spike in internet traffic after the stay-at-home order began last year.
Yeah, it's a good thing DirectLink works hard to provide constant, reliable broadband service even during tough weather, peak use hours, and that big jump in increased demand.
Right, and we need access to a quality connection more than ever. We're working from home, the kids are still distance learning, and I've even had a few online doctor's appointments.
Yeah, not only that, but so many of our entertainment options have gone virtual. They're streaming TV shows and movies, Zoom game nights, and online gaming, so people really need reliable internet.
Wait. With all of that extra online activity going on, don't we have to worry about usage limits and high bills from using too much data?
Come on, Tyler. How many times have we been over this? DirectLink doesn't have data caps and doesn't charge extra fees for high usage. It says so right there on their website. Visit directlink.coop today to learn more. Okay, joining us now is Clackamas County Chair Judy Smith. And Chair Smith, I wanted to start by just asking you for your reaction to, we're recording this on Saturday, so yesterday's press conference with Governor Kate Brown and the Oregon Health Authority and the announcement she made with regard to counties that meet her threshold for extreme risk, including Clackamas and the rising hospitalization statewide.
Good point. The governor's approach that she has been using for over the past year has got to change. The plan, this plan, past plans, they all have been an abject failure, driving businesses into bankruptcy and harming our mental health. It's time for the governor to hand over control back to the local public health authority and county commissions as outlined in law and the Oregon Constitution. If you remember, Tyler, she took that authority away through executive order. I believe every county commission in the state knows public health. They know how to keep their people safe, and they know what to do, I think, in this crisis. And a one-size-fits-all approach that she's been using is not working. Obviously not. We've been at this for a year. We've been some type of shutdown for over a year. What is it, 13 months now? People have been wearing masks yeah. For the most part, as I can see, every time I go out, I wear a mask. Everybody else is wearing a mask. Stores are clean, restaurants are clean, and we still aren't getting there.
Yeah, well, and I know that the frustration for you and other county leaders and public health officials has to be the different, you mentioned kind of that one size fits all, but some of the metrics they're using are county, you know, based on the case counts and whatnot. Some are statewide. Why do statewide hospitalizations apply? Why not the hospital capacity here in Clackamas County? Why aren't we judged by that metric? Which I don't know. Maybe you can speak to that. How is our hospital system with regard to COVID right now?
Well, the hospital system fluctuates. I think we're fine on the hospital system. My understanding, and you can check this out, back in December, the state of Oregon got hundreds of millions of dollars, and they could have used that to increase hospital capacity without building new hospitals. They didn't do that. They should have done that. I think it's also time that we start looking at proven technologies that used to slow this disease. Our airlines are a perfect example of that. They're stacking people like sardines on their airplanes, flying them all over the country. People are not getting sick from airlines. That's a proven technology. As a matter of fact, on Friday, I talked to one of my doctors about that. He uses that technology in his clinic where he sees sick people all the time. It works. I have asked the governor 2 months ago. I asked the governor, that I would volunteer to head up a statewide task force to look at those technologies. She can pick the people. We haven't even had a conversation in this state on how to slow this virus and known and unknown viruses for the future. That is a public health failure that is embarrassed. And frankly, I am outraged. It needs to change right now.
Chair Smith, I know that you obviously have been, you know, fighting this, voicing your opinion, you know, the areas in which you disagree with the governor and the state's approach to this pandemic for a long time, even before assuming office this most recent time. Now in your role as chair, I've seen you, you know, take I feel somewhat of a different approach to where you understand, you know, you're a member of a five member board. You are trying to bring together different views because there are within our community different views as far as what we should do, what businesses should do and whatnot. But I've seen in some of your comments, and I didn't know if that was part of what you kind of wanted to share today, is just increasing frustration on your part. And with this apparently heading toward a potential third shutdown here in Clackamas County, are you pushing the board or are you advocating for any type of disregarding this type of thing or doing something different, demanding something different? It feels like things might be coming to a head. Is that accurate?
I think things are coming to a head with our citizens and our residences. Yeah. Last week, I was engaged in conversations with a shocking amount of business owners, the quality of the businesses who have had it. If any business owner disregards the orders, it's not something that comes from our county commission. Sensible governance is important. Responsible governance is important, but that does not mean that you buy in to the theory that continued lockdowns are somehow going to save society when probably at least 38 states in America are opening up and they have the same problems that we do. In fact, some of our rates are some of the, have been historically some of the lowest, and then they have spiked. Well, if they're spiking right now and we're still using these protocols with masks and they're spiking when we've had more vaccinations than ever, something is not working. We need to take a different approach to this. And that's what I'm going to be talking with my county commission on. I will take the lead on this. My county commissioners, all five of them, or all four of them, including myself, are equally frustrated with the governor. And you're gonna find, I think, a lot of county commissions equally frustrated. In fact, yesterday, we had a Zoom meeting with the governor at 3 o'clock. She asked for the chairs of the county commissions to go on a Zoom meeting with her after she made the announcement. It's not like we got a heads up on it. And Judge Crawford from Crook County says, Governor, you're not even using the right numbers for my county. You're using the Portland State numbers, and these are the accurate numbers, and you're wrong. Totally wrong. And they were putting him in a higher category than he should have been in. So it makes you wonder how these people can add one and one and get 65 out of it.
Yeah. To the point about the recent surge that we're seeing, Chair Smith, have Clackamas County public officials, I know you get very regular updates from them, have they shared their thoughts on what's leading to that? Because as you say, it is a little confusing to the general public. We see the vaccination rates going up. We see businesses have not been, you know, more open recently. The one thing I guess that is different in a lot of places is schools a little more, gradually reopened than they have been. But have county officials weighed in on what they think is leading to this surge and apparent rise in hospitalization?
We all at Clackamas County are frustrated and think the metrics aren't being properly applied. We would like to have true metrics. However, they keep changing and the numbers are inaccurate. We've had clinics in Clackamas County. At first, if you remember, Tyler, you know, we had to go to the convention center. We had to go for the vaccination. You know, traveling, 35 to 40 miles for our residents is not doable. So we set up clinics in Southern Clackamas County, in Mullal and Sandy and Camby and Clackamas Town Center. And I also pressed officials, some of our pharmacies to get vaccinations. Our schedule for people to get vaccinated is almost full in Clackamas County. We don't have the vaccination.
Okay.
That's the problem. We don't have the vaccination.
More demand than supply.
Oh, absolutely. And then on the call yesterday, the governor says, well, this is only going to be for 3 weeks. And by the time June comes around, we should be okay because people will be vaccinated. Well, we've been hearing that we're going to get the vaccination, but it just has not been forthcoming. But you know, Tyler, she said that before. How many times have I heard her say that? Oh, it's just around the corner. It's just around the corner. Well, you keep using the same failed approach. We'll never get around that corner back to start to reopen.
Yeah, yeah. So I just want to make sure I understood you correctly a little earlier, Chair Smith. It sounded like you personally and the board corporately are not, at least at this point, telling businesses one way or another. You're basically saying, you know, we understand that whatever decision a business may make with regard to if there is another shutdown or more restrictions that come down, you're basically saying we understand and acknowledge that businesses are facing hard choices and need to kind of make those decisions, but you're not advocating one way or another. It sounded like that's what I heard from you.
I come from the philosophy of freedom. I believe each person has a choice to make. Mm-hmm. Regarding the vaccination, regarding whether they're going to open their businesses or not. But the minute, and I know have businesses who have opened who have disregarded, mm-hmm. and the governor has punished them. She has brought in OSHA to take away their liquor license and their video poker.
Mm-hmm.
I think OSHA needs to stand down for my county. If OSHA continues on those efforts, I think OSHA needs to be escorted out of our county by as many citizens as we can find to do it. OSHA is not welcome in Clackamas County. If the only thing they're going to do is provide punitive measures, what OSHA should be doing is exploring these new technologies that I've mentioned to try to write safety plans for restaurants so they can open. That's their job. That's OSHA's job. OSHA's job is not to be a police force, and that's what they've done.
Yeah, yeah. And you've been talking about that for some months now as far as improved air filtration systems that you think would be helpful in a lot of places and things of that
absolutely.
Nature.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I have it in my office. I have it in my home. You know, I went through the forest fires here in South County. My home was not livable for 3 weeks. So yeah. I bought all those air filtration systems. I put it on my furnace. It's a proven technology. It's not that old. We need a conversation in this state, at least to start talking about that. The governor has refused my request time and time again.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Chair Smith, well, I know that it's kind of a busy weekend for you. It turned out to be. We don't want to take too much of your time. Wanted to see just kind of where does Clackamas County go from here in this next week? Obviously, we're going to be watching those hospitalization numbers closely because that's what the governor and her office are basing their decision on. As far as you and your board, what's the week kind of look like? What are your plans here in these next few days as we await?
Thank you for Tyler. My plans, we're going to wait and see what the governor actually does. I pushed back on her really hard. Basically, I gave her notice. And so if she clamps down on us, we're just going to have to react to that. We're not sure what the reaction is going to be on Monday. I'll be issuing a video. We're going to watch, see what happens Monday. There's going to be a very public video on my part, talking to my citizens and residents of Clackamas County, knowing that I'm fighting for them. And and I feel their frustration. My whole board feels their frustration.
Yeah. And your pushback is, as you said, you feel like we've had enough.
We've had enough. And Tyler, I'm not exactly sure what those plans will be forthcoming, and we'll announce them when we make a decision. But hopefully, maybe she won't go into extreme risk. Hopefully, maybe she will reconsider. We have some county commissions, some major county commissions who you're going to see try to push back on this.
Okay. To the citizens that might be listening to this, the business owners, is there anything you'd like to share directly to them that might be listening to this?
I'm collecting stories. Please email me, bcc@clackamas.us. All kinds of COVID stories, whether you have a business child, whether you've had a vax, whether you've been sick, whether you've had loved ones die. I'm just collecting the business stories. I want to hear from you.
Okay. Of how the pandemic and or the restrictions.
How the pandemic has affected them. Have you not been able to see your grandchildren? Have you missed a wedding? Have you missed a birth? Have you missed your job loss? Are you able to make your mortgage payment, your car payment? Are you able to get in to see your doctor when you want to? What's the hospital doing? All kinds of stories about how the pandemic has affected them.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Chair Smith. We'll be watching this. We'll be waiting to hear more. We appreciate your efforts. I know it's incredibly challenging, the challenges you and so many of our business owners are facing right now. So thank you for your time and your efforts.
Tyler, and thank you for doing this. Reach out anytime. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby. If the city of Canby were a wheel, then Waite Park would be the hub. The city revolves around it. It is the host of many of the city's most popular and well-known events, from the Canby Independence Day celebration, once known as General Canby Days, to Light Up the Night, which draws thousands to downtown Canby each year to help ring in the holiday season. Today marks the start of a new series on Canby Then, looking at the history of the city's parks. They play a much more important role than you may realize. They are the places children play, yes, but one day those children grow up, and the lives they lead and the futures they build are shaped in no small part by the dreams that first began to take shape on the playgrounds of their youth. Waite is the city's oldest park. Though it was not officially deeded to the Canby until 1967, its history goes back much further than that. The property that would one day become Waite Park was part of the original 1870 plat for the city of Canby filed 150 years ago. It was part of the original donation land claim of Canby that founding father Philander Lee, the Oregon Trail pioneer who grew amazing whiskers, but also apples, which he shipped by train and sold to miners during the California Gold Rush. Just to the north was the claim of Aaron E. Waite, whose descendants would eventually own the land and donate it to the city, and after whom the park is named. Waite is a fascinating and influential figure in early Oregon history. It is well known that he was the first Chief Justice of the state's Supreme Court, but he was so much more than that. Aaron Waite was born in Whatley, Massachusetts, on the day after Christmas in 1813. His father was a soldier in the War of 1812, which actually lasted until 1815, and was killed in action shortly after Aaron was born. He was raised by his uncle and grandfather. At the age of 14, he became an apprentice broom maker in Hatfield and put the money he earned towards his own education. At age 20, he moved to Long Island, New York, where he taught country winter schools and was an assistant teacher in Erasmus Hall, though he would later confess he never really liked teaching. He eventually returned to Massachusetts before moving west in 1837 and settling in Centerville, Michigan. There, he befriended Judge Columbia Lancaster, who would also be influential in the early governance of both Oregon and Washington State. Young Aaron had taken an interest in political matters since he was a boy, a biographer once noted, and he had always been a Democrat. During the presidential campaign of 1844, he edited a Democratic paper in Michigan and afterwards held the office of military secretary in the cabinet of Governor John L. Berry. In the spring of 1847, Waite headed to the Oregon country in a wagon train of 40 ox-drawn wagons. His party included Judge Lancaster and Lancaster's small family. They arrived safely in mid-September of that year. Watchful care was exercised, and no serious accident nor difficulty occurred on the journey, Waite's biographer noted. Other than being tiresome, the journey was not an unpleasant one. The one colorful episode history preserves involved the spectacles Waite wore for nearsightedness. Native Americans who noticed the strange facial adornments asked what they were for, and Waite said they allowed him to see a long way off. The natives avoided him after that. They had misunderstood his explanation to mean that the spectacles made it so he could see anything, anywhere. Once in Oregon, he set up a law practice in Oregon City and entered into an agreement with Oregon's first governor, George Abernathy, to edit the fledgling Oregon Spectator. The Spectator was the first American newspaper west of the Rocky Mountains and would soon become the main paper of the region, used by politicians for public debate of the leading topics of the day. It had little competition. Before the Spectator, the only newspapers circulated in the territory were tiny pamphlets printed in San Francisco and Monterey, which were delivered by ship at random intervals, and, bizarrely, a paper based in Honolulu, Hawaii, which at the time was commonly known as the Sandwich Islands, for reasons that are much less hilarious than you might guess. Some folks also received letters and papers from the States once a year by immigrants coming down the Oregon Trail. When the Cayuse War broke out, sparked by the massacre of missionaries Marcus and Narcissa Whitman, whom Philander Lee and his family had met on their own journey to Oregon, Waite was appointed first assistant commissary under General Joel Palmer. While in that capacity, Waite was tasked with securing provisions for the troops in the field, no easy task. Legend has it that someone told him, "Go to God Almighty Smith." He was able to give. "He won't, but you try him." This Alvin Thompson God Almighty Smith was an accomplished carpenter on the Tualatin Plains, which we know now as the city of Forest Grove. He was, in the word of one historian, a serious man who did serious work. He was a devout Christian from his boyhood days. His nickname had been bestowed on him by the Indians, who heard his frequent prayers to God Almighty. And as one of his contemporaries, Dolly Hinman, would recall, quote, "Mr. Smith was a very stern man, keeping the Sabbath from sundown Saturday to sundown Sunday, and woe betide anyone who did not do likewise." Obviously, Aaron Waite had his work cut out for him. He arrived at Mr. Smith's late in the day and made his errand known. Never one to make a quick decision, Mr. Smith said, "You must stay with me all night, and we will talk it over." Well, old man Smith must have heard a still, small voice during his prayers that night, because he did indeed agree to furnish equipment for the soldiers in the field and rendered other aid. He even accompanied Waite to another settler's ranch near the foothills, where the two men procured a drove of hogs for the War Department and its hungry soldiers. God Almighty Smith's home still stands on Elm Street in modern-day Forest Grove. It is the second oldest building in the city and was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1974. That house fell into disrepair and was even home to a meth lab in 2005, but was saved through the heroic fundraising efforts of the Friends of the Historic Forest Grove, which raised $175,000 to purchase and restore the property. Their efforts included, and I'm not kidding, a sexy calendar featuring members of the group in various nude poses. We were told it was quite tasteful. The name of the calendar, of course, was The History Buffs. God only knows what the good Alvin Smith would have thought about that. We'll have more to tell you about the adventures of Justice Aaron E. Waite and the Canby Park that bears his name, but it'll have to wait till next time on Canby Then.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears? Even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yeah, heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.